Hello, welcome to Lectionary at Lunch at Concordia Seminary. I'm Professor Tom Egger, and we are going to be looking this week at the readings for Sunday, August 2nd. And the Old Testament reading is from Exodus 16, the story of manna in the wilderness. The pericope, as it's listed in the LSB lectionary, is verses 2 through 15. What that leaves off by beginning at verse 2 is the sort of the logistical description in verse 1 that says that the congregation set out from Elim and they journeyed to the wilderness of Sin, and it points out that the wilderness of Sin, the place that this grumbling is going to take place in, is located between Elim and Mount Sinai. So this sense of the people having been delivered from Egypt, they're on their way to Mount Sinai, and now they're in the in-between place. And verse 1 ends with a specific reference talking about that the timing of this setting out is on the 15th day of the second month of the coming out of the sons of Israel from the land of Egypt. So it's a reminder of their salvation, and it's an important reminder, again, as we read this pericope of grumbling, God has just delivered them from the slavery of Egypt. And what this highlights is their ingratitude. It also highlights this as a pilgrimage narrative. They're on their way to the place of, or to their destination, the first to Mount Sinai and eventually to the Promised Land. And it's a picture of the struggle of faith against the realities of everyday life as it meets up with the fears and the threats that surround us, the struggle of faith to continue to look to Yahweh, look to our saving God for our hope and for our sustenance. So the Hebrew begins in verse 2 for this pericope. The very first word is an unusual one. It's from the hollow root loon or lean. It's one meaning of loon or lean is to stay the night, to lodge overnight. That's the most common meaning. But here in this pericope from Exodus and also from the grumbling passages in Numbers, there is a second use of the verb loon or lean, which means to murmur or to grumble. And here it's a niphal form, and you'll notice there's a kare reading out in the margin, which points the middle vowel as a holam vav. And so it begins with this vav consecutive from loon, vi yilonu, and they murmured, kol edat b'nei Yisrael, the whole congregation of the sons of Israel, all Moshe v'all Aharon b'amidbar. They grumbled all Moshe against Moses and against Aaron in the wilderness. This is really this preposition all, to grumble against or to murmur against. This is really the key problem with grumbling. If the people had cried out to Yahweh or even cried out to Moses as Yahweh's representative, then that would be an act of faith. But to simply murmur against Yahweh, which is actually what they're doing, Moses is going to point out later, or to murmur against Moses and Aaron, this is to simply grumble to one another. And it's not the speech of faith, but it's the speech of budding unbelief. They grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the Midbar, in the wilderness. Verse 3, Vayomeru Alehem b'nei Yisrael, Mi yiten mutenu b'yad Yahweh b'eretz Mitzrayim. And they said to them, the sons of Israel did, they said to Moses and Aaron, Mi yiten, who would give, from the verb natan. This is an idiom that expresses a wish, if only, it's oftentimes rendered. So if only, and then you have the infinitive construct from mut, to die, with the enu suffix, if only our dying, or if only we had died, b'yad Yahweh, by the hand, a bait of means there, by the hand of Yahweh, in the land of Egypt. Now, a temporal clause with an infinitive construct, the verb here is yashav, as it reads in the text, it's b'shivtenu, and the infinitive construct that's hidden inside that word is shevet, from the verb yashav, to dwell or to sit, when we sat. is how it's rendered then. When we sat, all seer habasar, alongside the cooking pot of the meat. When we sat by, probably here, cooking pot is a collective, a singular noun acting in place of a plural thought. So alongside cooking pots of meat, and now another temporal clause with an infinitive construct from akal, ba'aklenu lechem la'sova. When we akaled, when we ate, lechem, bread, la'sova. Sova is related to the verb sava, which means to be filled, to be satisfied, to be satiated. And here the lamed acts really as a temporal lamed, probably, indicating the point up to which. So until, when we ate bread to the point of, you might say, fullness, to the point of being satisfied. Now the key, they've just been reminiscing about the good days of Egypt. Now the key here is contrastive. But hotsetem, you, plural, speaking to Moses and Aaron, but you have brought us out. This is the hifil perfect of yatsah. But you have brought out otanu, us, el midbar hazeh, into this wilderness, lehamit et kol hakahal hatzeh barava. You have brought us out, lehamit. This is an infinitive construct indicating purpose. You've brought us out in order to, the hifil of moot, kill, cause to die or kill. In order to kill this whole congregation, ba-ra'av, by means of famine or by means of starvation. Now, even though this is just a portrayal of their whining and also their fear, it's also important theologically that what's at view in this passage is life and death. And the giving of bread is not, it's not merely a convenience out in the wilderness, but this miraculous bread that's going to be provided is the bread that gives life, the bread that's going to sustain their life here in the wilderness. Verse 4, Vayomer Yahweh el Moshe, now God speaks, and Yahweh said to Moses, Hineni mamtir lachem lechem min hashamayim. Hineni here is more than just hine. Hine is behold, but hineni has the first common singular suffix on the end, e, and it is going to provide the subject of the participle that follows. Mamtir is the hifil participle of matar, to rain. So in the hifil, cause to rain. I am going to cause to rain. Oftentimes, hine plus the participle has the nuance of imminent action. I am about to cause to rain for you bread from the sky, bread from heaven. V'yatsa ha'am v'laktu devar yom b'yomo. And the people will yatsa, will go out, and they will lakat, gather, devar yom, the matter of the day in its day. This is an idiom, devar yom b'yomo, the matter of a day in its day, refers to the amount of the bread that they are going to be gathering. They'll go out, they'll gather the amount, the daily amount of bread each day. Lema'an anasenu, so that I may nasa, here anasa, or anasenu comes from the third hey verb nasa, to test. This is also important for understanding this passage. God's going to provide this bread. He's also going to provide it in this daily way and command them to gather only the amount for its day, in order that, lema'an, I might test him, literally this enu ending is third masculine singular, that I might test him, but it refers back to the am, the people of Israel in the singular, in order that I might test him. And now here's the nature of the test. Ha yelek batorati imlo. This is an interrogative hey, that hey with the composite schwa, question mark. He will walk in my Torah imlo, or not. Okay, so God is testing them. Will they walk in his Torah or not? And we don't find out in this pericope, but we find out later in chapter 16 that in fact they don't, or at least many of them don't follow the guidelines that God has given for the manna. So here's one of the purposes, or a couple we've seen already, to give life, to spare them from death, to test them to see whether they'll walk in his Torah or not, which they fail. And pretty soon we're also going to see another purpose that God would reveal to them that he is Yahweh and that he's the one who brought them out of Egypt. So on we go to verse 5. V'haya bayom ha-shishi v'hekinu et asher yavi'u v'haya mishneh al asher yilketu yom yom. And it will be, God's continuing to tell Moses what's about to happen here, and it will be, vav consecutive perfect, in the sixth day, or on the sixth day, they will prepare. Now here we've just had a temporal clause, on the day, the sixth one. The vav consecutive perfect, v'hekinu, that vav consecutive perfect signals the main clause beginning after the temporal clause on the sixth day. So, and it will be on the sixth day, they will, and this is a hifil perfect from kun, to make ready or to prepare, and they will prepare, direct object, that which they bring in from the hollow root bow in the hifil, that which they bring. And it will be, or there will be, v'haya, mishneh, double. You see the word shanayim there, the word for two, from the root shana. This is its noun form, double. There will be double, double what? Double over what they lakot gather day by day. In other words, on the sixth day, there will be on the ground double over and above what they normally lakot, what they normally gather yom yom, day by day, on a daily, on the other days. Verse 6. Vayomer Moshe v'Aharon el kol b'nei Yisrael, and Moses and Aaron said to the whole, or to all the sons of Israel, Erev v'yadatim, ki Yahweh hotzi etkem me'eretz Mitzrayim. Here, the word erev, evening, just stands on its own. It's acting as an really as an adverbial accusative. That's the function of this noun here. And as an adverbial accusative, you really translate it as a prepositional phrase. So literally, it just says, evening and you will know. But we would render that erev as a prepositional phrase, in the evening, comma, y'all will know, y'all will yada, that Yahweh hotzi, Yahweh brought etkem you from the land of Egypt. Yetzah, to come forth, the hifil, to bring forth. The subject, or the goal of their knowing here, the subject that God wants them to know, is that he is the one who brought them out of the land of Egypt. Why does he say that? Because the people are now complaining, they've just been complaining that Moses has brought them out into the wilderness to kill them by famine. God is wanting to remind them he is the one who has been delivering them. He is the one who is in their midst. He is the one who is leading them. And this provision of manna has the goal of displaying that before their eyes. Verse 7. Uvoker Uvoker ura'item et kavod Yahweh, b'shamo et talunotekem, all Yahweh, v'naknu ma ki talinu aleinu. And mourning, again, just like erev in the last verse here, mourning acts like an adverbial accusative of time, so we translate it in the morning. And in the morning, now the vav consecutive perfect introduces the main clause, y'all will see, from ra'ah, you will see, direct object, the kavod Yahweh. And now we have an infinitive construct of shema with a the preposition bait on the front of it acting in a causal sense. It's going to give the reason why they will see the glory of Yahweh, the reason why they will be forced to know that Yahweh is the one who brought them out of the land of Egypt through this manna provision. Because of his hearing, direct object, your murmurings. This tulunotekem, it's a mouthful, you can see has the hollow root loon or lean in it. It's the noun form of that with a prefixed tav. Oftentimes Hebrew constructs nouns by adding a mame or a tav to the front of a verbal root. So this is the plural form with a second masculine plural suffix, your murmurings. Because he has heard your murmurings against Yahweh. And there's the otnak. Now, v'naknu, naknu here is really just an abbreviated form of anaknu, the independent pronoun we. Here it's a disjunctive vav introducing the pronoun we, so it's an emphatic change of subject. They've just said, Yahweh has heard your murmurings against Yahweh, but as for us, ma, what are we? Notice the disjunctive accent above ma, so it's really to be read with naknu. But, I suppose you would say, but what are we? Or even, but who are we? Ki talinu aleinu. What are we that you murmur against us? Hey, we're just Yahweh's representatives. Yahweh is the one who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Your murmurings, he has heard against him. You aren't just murmuring against us. You're murmuring against Yahweh. Verse 8. Vayomer Moshe betate Yahweh lakem ba'erev basar le'ekol velekem ba'voker Leshivoa, ba Shemoa Yahweh et Tulunotekem, Asher ata Malinim Alav. Vanaknu Ma Lo Alenu Tulunotekem Ki Al Yahweh. All right, verse 8, it's a little difficult to follow the logic of this verse, but the sense seems to be that it's really just recapping the thought of the previous verse and re-emphasizing it. And Moses said, when Yahweh gives you bread in the when Yahweh gives to you in the evening meat for the purpose of eating, la'akol, and bread in the morning, baboker, for being satisfied, for Yahweh has heard your murmurings, which you are murmuring, here the hifil participle from loon, malinim, which you are murmuring against him. Notice all the emphasis that it's against Yahweh. And then he repeats, but what are we? Not against us are your murmurings, ki al Yahweh. And here ki is has the sense of but, or rather, against Yahweh. Verse 9. Vayomer Moshe el Aharon, Amor el Kol Adat B'nei Yisrael, Kirbu Lifnei Yahweh. And Moses said to Aaron, here the imperative form of Amar, speak to the whole congregation of the sons of Israel. And here's what he's supposed to say, the imperative, plural imperative of Karav, draw near before Yahweh. For he has heard your murmurings, ki shama et tulunotekem. Verse 10, vaihi, and it came to pass, and it happened. Vaihi oftentimes introduces a past tense temporal clause. And so here we have a temporal cough before the infinitive construct of dabar. And it happened as, or while, Aaron was speaking, and it happened during the speaking of Aaron, El Kol Adat B'nai Yisrael, to the sons of Israel. And now the Vav consecutive imperfect introduces the main clause. They turned El Hamidbar toward the wilderness, Vahine, and behold, Kavod Yahweh near Ah. The glory of Yahweh appeared or was appearing, that could either be a nifal perfect or a nifal participle, nirah, from the verb ra'ah. The glory of Yahweh was appearing ba'anan, in the cloud which has been with them previously in chapters 14 and 15, leading them through the sea and giving them protection from the Egyptians. Verse 11 is short. And Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, verse 12, Shemati et tolunot b'nei Yisrael, daber aleihem lemor. Yahweh says, I have heard, direct object, the murmurings of the sons of Israel. And now he gives this instruction in the PL imperative. Speak to them, saying, Bain ha'arbayim tokalu basar. Between the evenings, ha'arbayim is the dual form of erev, evening, and it has the sense of probably between sunset and actual darkness. So between the two evenings, the sense then is at dusk, in other words, between the evenings. Interestingly, this is the same time that the Passover lambs are to be sacrificed in the instructions that are given in chapters 11 and 12 about the Passover. So the manna, or I should say the quail, the provision of meat by God, is going to be given at this time between the evenings. Between the evenings, tokalu, you will eat basar, meat, u vaboker, and in the morning, tis ba'u lachem, you will be satiated with respect to bread, or you will be filled up with bread, possibly an accusative of material here. You'll be filled or satisfied with bread. V datim, and you will know, and you plural will know, a vav consecutive perfect here, perhaps even functioning kind of as the climactic result here, so that you will know, ki ani Yahweh Elohechem, that I am Yahweh your God. Verse 13, vahi ba'erev, and it happened in the evening. And then the next vav consecutive here introduces the main clause, vata'al ha-salav, vatakas et ha-makana. Here the subject is ha-salav. Ha-salav, kind of a strange word to pronounce. This is a word for quail. It's a collective, so it has many quail in view, but it's grammatically singular, and it's feminine. That's why we get a third feminine singular noun here, vata'al ha-salav. And quail came up, so, and it happened in the evening, quail came up and covered, here vatakas, a PL form of kasa, a third hey noun, to cover. Again, the subject is the third feminine singular collective, quail. So, and they covered, direct object, the camp. Uva boker hayata shikbat hatal saviv lamakaneh. And in the morning there was a, here the word shikbat hatal. Tal is the word for dew. Tal is the word for dew. And shikbat seems to have the sense of a layer. So there was in the morning a layer of dew, saviv, the adverb all around, la makaneh, at the camp. Verse 14, vata'al shikbat hatal, and the layer of dew went up, again, a third feminine singular verb with shikbat as the subject, shikvah, and the layer of dew went up, v'hene, and behold, al panei ha-midbar, upon the face of the wilderness, dak makuspas, dak kakipur al ha'aretz. And the layer of dew went up, and behold, upon the face of the wilderness, dak. Dak really is an adjective that means something thin. So here it seems to be used just as a substantive adjective, something thin. Behold, upon the face of the wilderness, something thin, And then this next word, which is an odd form, it's a pu-al-al participle, according to the lexicon, from the verb kasaf, and it's used as a substantive participle here, meaning apparently scale-like stuff. So here on the face of the wilderness, something thin, something scaly or flaky, and then it further clarifies or further describes using dak again, dak ka kippur, thin like frost or like hoarfrost upon the ground. Verse 15, Vayir'u b'nei Yisrael, and the children of Israel, the sons of Israel, saw, Vayomaru ish el akiv, and they said, each to his fellow man, each to his neighbor, Man hu, ki lo yadu ma hu. They said to each other, and the statement that they make here is man hu. Hold that in your mind for just a second. Here's the reason why they say it. Because they did not know mahu. They did not know what it was. Now, man, with a nun on the end, usually is translated as manna. That's what the manna is that's the Hebrew word for manna, man. So it would say here, and each said to his brother, man who, manna it is, or manna that is. But then it says, but they didn't know what it was, mahu. So probably it's best to translate man in its first appearance here really just as a variant form of ma, so that you have them not making a statement, it's manna, and already knowing its name, but rather you have them asking, what is it? So, and they said each to his brother, what is that? For they did not know what it was, what that was, mahu. Vayomer Moshe Alehim, and Moses said to them, Hu halekem asher natan Yahweh lakim la akla. And Moses said to them, that is the bread, the lekem, which Yahweh has given to you la akla, for food. You can see the noun food there, built from the verb to eat, akal. All right, well, that's the Hebrew, and that's the verse. As I mentioned earlier, they go on to disobey his commandment to not keep the manna over for the next day, and it rots and stinks. They also disobey his commandment to gather double portion, the double portion that he'll provide on the sixth day, and instead many go out on the seventh day to gather manna, which causes God to be angry. In all of this, God is testing them, and one of the key questions in the minds of the people in this pericope seems to be, is Yahweh our God, and also, did he really bring us out of the land of Egypt? Or is this just some crazy scheme that Moses cooked up and we're out here on our own with Moses and one another and no food in the wilderness? In chapter 17, when they thirst and again grumble, again this word, this verb lean comes up, the question that God once settled is whether or not God is in their midst. It says they tested the Lord saying, is God among us or not? So that question is also looming in the context here. Is God really with us? But fundamentally and finally, this is a story about life and death, and it's about faith in God who has delivered them to sustain them and provide for them to their destination. It's a picture of the failing faith of God's people, but it's also a picture of the patience of God and his provision for them, so that they might know that he is their God. Jesus, of course, in the gospel reading will be in a discussion about this pericope, about the bread that Moses provided in the wilderness, and he will emphasize that true life, the life that goes on forever, is provided not by the manna in the wilderness through Moses, but in the true bread that came down from heaven. Just like, interestingly, the manna is described in this passage. God says he will rain bread min hashamayim, from heaven. the true bread who comes down from heaven is Jesus Christ, and it's his flesh then that will give true life to the world.